This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Shake Them Ropes, Jeff Hawkins, Chris Novembrino. Earmuffs for the kids for 15 seconds. Bitches, screw all of you.
Whoa, all right. He said he had a weird idea. He's going for
it. The greatest line ever uttered on WWE television to end SmackDown this week. Bayley, full-on heel turn. Chris, we are still in the same week as Hell in a Cell. How is this possible?
Because WWE's main roster is a product right now that is very much on the search. And the search is ugly, and it is happening in public.
Yeah. If you haven't watched Hell in a Cell, I'll give you a few things to look at. By now, all the takes are ice cold, other than the fact that apparently you're not allowed to use a sledgehammer like a sledgehammer in terms of its actual usage in WWE. Hunter can bring it in, hit you with a handle, hit you with the metal part, you know, in terms of in your gut. But if you are to swing a hammer like a hammer, disqualification, this match has gotten far too violent.
The thing I had the biggest problem with in that match was not even the 10 finishers, although I'm aware that there were far too many curb stomps. It was the ref moralizing. If I never, ever, ever see a ref moralizing spot like that ever again, I will be very happy because... yeah, the disqualification was ridiculous. The Fiend, that little fucking, I'm sorry, that little sound hit that keeps happening. Like, it's so bad. And on Friday, on SmackDown this week, I turned a quarter on it, Jeff, because I started laughing when the Fiend showed up during that Roman Reigns Seth Rollins match. So, like, I've now completely, I've jumped the shark on this. It is now just damn funny to me. At like, it's horrible. It's like some of the worst best Bray Wyatt ever.
My favorite comment about the SmackDown thing was a guy who responded to my snarky tweet. It's like, well, you know, we can put all these chairs and tables and kendo sticks underneath the ring, but the hell mouth might have been a bad idea. You know, a portal into the into the netherworld.
And then there was smoke for just a moment. And Cole had to sell it like he got dragged to hell. But it wasn't even like the out of the match. God.
Hell, Hornswoggle, and tasty beverages all underneath the ring.
No, it's really bad.
Yeah, if you want to hear my hot takes, I was on the Fightful post show. So what's worth watching? Mostly anything involving the women I thought was great. I thought the Becky-Sasha Hell in a Cell match was quite good. I thought Charlotte and Bayley told a nice little story there, even though they've now switched that title twice in 1 week. And the ladies' tag team championship match, good especially for the ending. Asuka is now using the green mist. It's something I've wanted for 3 years. It's just not something I want every week.
Yeah, I think they are banking a little too much on that to get them over as heels. I think the cool factor with the Kabuki Warriors, coupled with right now a lack of real heelishness from them, is going to ultimately turn them back face unless they do a little bit of a course correction here to make sure that they're very strongly heels. But then the other issue here is there are no strong baby faces for them to play off of.
Exactly.
The Alexa Nikki Cross pairing has always been done as like a tentative pairing, with the breakup being teased down the road here. And I think the audience has been onto that, so they've never fully bought into that pairing. And you don't have great foils for them to work against to really get themselves over as heels, because, like, you know, your Becky Lynch's and stuff, they're tied up with that alpha storyline going on right now.
Well, Kairi Sane and Bayley were the two most natural baby faces to ever baby face in WWE, and they couldn't figure out what to do with them. And the problem is, you make baby faces so dumb that when they finally have had enough of it and they snap and they do something you think is heelish, everybody applauds as a release to finally, you're sick of taking this crap.
Yeah, it's the passive aggressive person finally snapping. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And it's been happening up and down. Like, I love the reaction to Bayley this week. I think Bayley's going to be a hell of a heel because I think she's not the best actress on the roster, let's put it that way, but she's able to channel certain frustrated emotions that you could see in her babyface work as well. So I think she's going to be fine in terms of that. But it's like your babyfaces are now Charlotte, who, God, her and Bayley beat the crap out of each other this week. I got nothing but respect for them between those two matches. They were punching each other in the mouth. Great. But yeah, like you said, you don't have any. Like, every time you get somebody you think you can get behind to root for that's purely good, they have to do something self-interested, and that's viewed as a positive state. Like Ember Moon, when she eclipsed Bayley during the tag match because they're gonna have a title match against each other. It's just up and down this card. You don't have anybody purely good. It's at. I think it was Lawler who once said that all women secretly hate each other. And I think it's a misogynist point of view that they actually believe in management there. So that's an issue. Meanwhile, you have Riho on AEW, who is possibly their hottest star right now.
Yeah, that's interesting. Do you want to talk about NWA and AEW before we get back to the WWE-made
yes.
products?
Yes, because there's a lot to learn from both these shows, I think, in terms of when you're framing in the WWE product. But, man, I loved NWA Power for what it was.
Oh, yeah. NWA Power is awesome, especially at the budget that they're working at. It's great.
It's intimate, which is great. You can do really great promos and back-and-forth promos that you can't do in an arena.
It feels really kinetic. All those promos yes. can segue perfectly into the ring because you're walking a few paces from the promo place to the ring. I love that very intimate vibe. It kind of reminded me a little bit of Lucha Underground, or it's a little bit of the vibe that Lucha Underground and the Temple was able to capture with the Temple vibe. But NWA does it even more. I love Eddie Kingston. I think Eddie Kingston
yes.
is a
yes.
really, really great underdog type character, and they did a really nice job getting him over in this first episode.
This week when they were talking about Cain Velasquez and Ray being the vocal board. Of course, Dave Meltzer comes out and goes, you know who would be great for that is Conan. And it's just like, Conan is just going to come out and make homophobic references. And
hey, I also want my friends to get work, Jeff.
Yeah, I didn't want to say that, but that's
I'll say
you.
It.
Okay. Thank
Whatever.
You. I thought Eddie Kingston would be a great mouthpiece for Cain Velasquez because he was in the Evolve family, at least in that circle. If he was unsigned, I would have signed him because, man, for this NWA show, a guy that can talk, and you saw it with Eli Drake a little bit. You saw it with even Nick Aldis. I mean, the talking is going to make your money here.
And Nick Aldis is
it's
great.
It's something missing in wrestling, and it's what these Wednesday night shows don't get still, is that you make your money with your mouth. And you know, sure, you're going to have squash matches and you're going to have 50-year-old Tim Storm, who was fantastic.
Yeah, he's really great, too. And I love the video package. The video package
yes.
was great. So, yeah, he's old. Yeah, Tim Storm's old. Let's say it one more time just to get it out of the way. He's old. He's old.
He's
old.
Grizzled and he's
And they did a great job leaning into that rather than running away from him being old. Rather than acting like
cool.
It's not cool. No, he's a family man. He's a grandpa. They volunteered that. Rather than running away from it, they lean into it. And that works because then Jim Cornette's on the microphone on commentary and going, for his age, look at his physique. And he is in great shape for his age, but just generally in great shape. So, like, no, I thought that was great. I liked that match a lot, and I just loved all of the promos that Nick Aldis had to do throughout this show. I remember when he was Magnus, I was still doing the Stipulation podcast like 1,000 years ago here when Voices of Wrestling was still put out on cassette tape. And I look at him, and he has come such a long way from Magnus, although Magnus was that first flash that he can actually kind of carry at that elite level. But Nick Aldis now is just so much more advanced than that, working kind of trying to carry that prestige of the brand, acting like he's a babyface, but he's really a heel and he's really a bad guy. And he did a really nice job flashing that bad guy character steadily throughout the show while still keeping the veneer of being a good guy. And it's such a fine line to be able to walk tonally, especially off script. So I was really impressed by that. I liked the main event. I thought this was a very, very good show.
I would agree. I think my one critique is that Jim Cornette's trying a little too hard. And you can hear him thinking on commentary, what am I supposed to be putting over here right now? As opposed to just kind of relaxing a little bit.
I like his choices, though. I feel you on that. But his choices were so refreshing. Because you're finally getting to hear the type of stuff that you've heard Cornette talk about on his podcast, which I admittedly don't listen to a whole bunch anymore. Or like, you know, his old shoot interviews and stuff, when he talks about what he feels is wrong with the business. It's really nice to see him applying his critiques to something constructive, and also to see those constructive critiques being applied in a way that I think is valid, and I think is really entertaining.
I thought AEW was okay. It still scratches my itch in terms of the two Wednesday night shows, which I'd rather watch.
Really?
Because I think the energy of AEW and more, you know, I mean, look, I'm partial to Tully Blanchard whenever he's on. I'm partial to Cody Rhodes' thoughts on booking, because I think he's the strongest of anybody out there right now in terms of storylines and logical progression and building up to big matches. But I am going to put over hard Chris Jericho. That promo on Wednesday night, in terms of if WWE had just had Steve Austin come out, and when they start whatting him, shut down that what chant in 10 seconds, this business, WWE would be a far stronger promotion. But Jericho got to talk, and he got to shut down that we the people chant. Even though he broke the fourth wall a bit, I will excuse him that. But just shutting down things that are antithetical to what you want to get across is so important. And feeling the crowd, and they're not allowed to feel the crowd in the WWE. They're not allowed to take it wherever it goes because they have points they got to get to and certain verbiage they have to say. And it's just, it was one of those things where I went, yes, God, get rid of this what chant once and for all, please, because you're killing your undercard wrestlers every time they come out and try and get themselves over.
I didn't feel like he healed enough on the crowd.
I would agree.
Yeah, I thought that was a big problem with that promo. It was a little long for me. I agree with all the strong points about that promo. I thought shutting down the We the People thing was good. I thought that he got over the Inner Circle good. The Inner Circle, how do I say this nicely? Do not feel like a premier top of the card. Okay, so let's try this a different way. There's the Undisputed Era, there's Imperium, and then there's Chris Jericho and his four friends and Jack Swagger. So like when I'm talking about the overarching top heel factions, there's a little certain something missing from the Inner Circle. Let's just be real about it.
I think LAX is out of place here. That's what I think. I mean, Guevara's fine because
I like him as Jericho's like little twerpy protege. Like, well, he's perfect for that.
If you read comic books, you'll get this reference. Chris may not, but I'm gonna say, if you remember Iron Man, Iron Wars, and the Justin Hammer faction of villains, Sammy Guevara is the Blizzard. He's the young guy who just got this technology that an older guy used to have, and the more veteran villains are like, all right, look, kid, you're okay, but follow our lead. And then he gets a little headstrong from time to time, and the villains just leave him every time. Because it's like, look, we can't handle this kid. That's Sammy Guevara, and I'm loving that storytelling.
No, I like that. But then let's go to the other thing. What I found so refreshing about NWA Power that AEW is still leaving me cold on, and it has been a long-standing complaint for me with WWE, particularly the main roster product, is NWA has a different match format that I feel is much closer to the style of wrestling that I like. Watching AEW Dynamite this week, I was watching that Young Bucks match, and that Young Bucks match against Private Party. They did so many spots that should have been pinning combinations, and we do kickouts for big two counts. And, like, I do want a different style of match from WWE, but that ain't it, Chief.
Mm-hmm. No, I would agree, and everybody's saying that's the indie style, and this is going to get...
Okay, then I don't care for the indie style, in quotes. Find a different style.
This is going to transition me into our WWE talk, because you and I were talking about this before, a little bit before we went to air. I think NXT is in real trouble. And I'll tell you why. It's not just the demographics. It's not just AEW's cool factor. It has a lot to do with what NXT is right now in the market share. NXT does not have an identity. NXT, when it was on the network, was our little form of rebellion against the main roster, just quagmire of crap and sports entertainment. That was our little wrestling show, 1 hour, a few promos here and there, in and out. And now that they've brought it to USA, it's a 2 hour.
It's a good wrestling show, but it doesn't have a flavor.
It's a great wrestling show with no flavor, nothing about wrestling other than the actual wrestling. It's I don't want to call it SmackDown with yellow ropes.
No. It's not. It's definitely not. It's distinctively different from the way that the main roster products are done, right down to the fact that they're not constantly like hammering you with the Fox and USA.
I'll add on to your statement. It's different, but there's nothing to differentiate it.
Yes, and they're not actually trying to differentiate themselves from the main roster product, which I think is one of their biggest mistakes. I actually think to make it framed like a little bit of an internecine war, that NXT is sort of revolting a little bit from the Raw and SmackDown brands, or has a little bit of a disdain for the Raw and SmackDown brands and views themselves as their own separate co-equal brand, I think would do a lot to make this feel like Rebel Headquarters again a little bit.
Yeah, and I think the 2 hours is hurting it a little bit because it's just so much rest. It's like eating ice cream for breakfast every day. It's so rich, and it's giving you a tummy ache.
They need to do more angles, I think, is the issue. Yes. Like, there needs to be promo. So, like, I think the one thing that AEW is doing right, and also what NWA Power is doing right, is they're sprinkling in the promos much more heavily and doing storytelling. And NXT has been so all out about putting out a good wrestling show. And if you go down this card, these matches, with the exception of the Forgotten Sons, who are the Forgotten Sons, these were all good matches. They were all well worked, and the wrestling is good. But if you've just started watching NXT in the last few weeks here, who's Isaiah Swerve Scott to you?
Exactly. And they didn't really bring up anything he did on that 205 Live where he got over really big either.
Right.
When he fought Gulak. Yeah.
They didn't really get Gulak over.
He was in.
They didn't really get Leo Rush over.
Remember him? He was in that tournament. You know, okay. He lost in that tournament. First round, I believe he lost in that tournament. So, you know, what's the use? But let's clean up some news and notes from the main roster for getting into our network programming. As I stated before, we've had a switch in a lot of the major titles. The SmackDown Women's Championship has changed twice. Charlotte winning it at Hell in a Cell. Bayley winning it on Friday at SmackDown to secure her heel turn. I'm liking Bayley's new look. I want some new gear. It sounds like she has some new music after she won. They played a different song. I'm down to see what she can do with the character.
Yeah, I think it's a nice fresh coat of paint for her, and I am down to see what they can do with this character. I'm glad we've been talking for months about her moving away from the kind of kid-friendly, let's hug Bayley, to doing something different. She's doing something different. Let's see where it goes. I'm totally in favor of this.
Yeah, if they're not going to cash in on the kid thing, there's no reason to try and expand that character.
Yeah.
It's really one of those things, you know, hey, you know, it was a good idea to everybody except Vince. Just wasn't a good idea to Vince.
And I hate to say it like this, but we've probably gotten really close to the end of the viability of that kid-friendly character with this particular performer. She's, you know, like, yeah, she's approaching my age, which, you know, in your 30s, it's weird to be the zany kid guy.
Yeah, it's a little, yeah, that was Bruce Mitchell's point. It was like, oh, you're you're the arrested development person who's still trying to hang on to your youth when you're in your 30s.
Yeah, right. It has a different vibe. It goes from being the young dreamer who's finally like lived out their childhood dream to being the person in denial.
The children's birthday party performer who is still doing it in their 40s, but they don't have a retirement plan. You know, that kind of thing. Where you're just like, you're going to the other one, the Comic-Con conventions, where you were famous for a role for like 3 years in the 70s, but you're still dressing up in the costume. That kind of vibe. The women's tag team title has switched. The Kabuki Warriors are now your new champions, thanks to The Mist, as we said before. Interested to see where this goes. They need a manager, in my opinion. Paige isn't coming back. Gary Hart's not available, but I do think they need a mouthpiece. Even though I loved that they let Asuka and Kairi do promo in Japanese. I thought that was awesome.
I've got a name for you. Stokely Hathaway.
Yes, Malcolm Bivens.
Yeah, Malcolm Bivens. Yeah, no, I think the impulse is to give them a female manager, and I think this is almost more fun with a male manager. No, like, sort of sexual dynamics or anything like that going on there, but I want someone who, like, he looks at them like the meal tickets.
And this is no offense to Stokely, who I love, but he's also a smaller man. And I think that's a better dynamic than having a guy like Gary Hart who would be a lot bigger than the people that he was managing at sometimes. I think Stokely Hathaway has that perfect body type to be the manager.
I think they have different plans for him based on that little Leo Rush cutscene. Yeah. That was wonderfully done. Like, you know, we were bagging on the backstage universe.
Describe it for people in case they haven't
seen it. So after Leo Rush has won the championship, which I mean, there are issues that we didn't really get Leo Rush over as this like underdog guy, and Moro did his best in a limited time frame. But backstage, he's celebrating, and there's a bunch of the who's that of NXT coming up to Leo Rush and going, "Hey man, my name is this," and shaking Leo Rush's hand and introducing themselves. I'm making a joke here. But in the back, far off in the distance, in the background, you see Stokely Hathaway just leaning up at the end of the hall watching all of this going down. And I thought that that was really nicely done.
Yeah, I thought it was nicely done if they're going to do something.
If they do
with
something
it.
With
my
it.
My fear is they were doing something that's big in movies and TV. It's called crossing patterns, where you get a bunch of extras. And in order to make it simulate that there's action going on in a place as opposed to it being very stale, you just say, okay, when we roll action, count to three, and you're going to walk across the screen to the other side. And you're going to look like you're working on a computer or something.
Sure, sure.
But which is what it came off to me as. I didn't see it as an Easter egg for Malcolm Bivens. I saw it as Malcolm Bivens doing extra work, but that goes into my next point. Leo Rush is your new NXT Cruiserweight Champion. I wish they'd get rid of this belt. If they're gonna fold it into NXT, get rid of the purple belt. That's all I want. But I loved that match. That match was great. We'll talk about it when we get to it. A couple more quick things. No Mae Young Classic this year. I find that sad because I think it's more of a positive for women's wrestling, but women's wrestling has grown to the point where everybody's getting signed, so talent's a little bit harder to come by. So maybe it's good that we don't have it anymore.
Yeah, it's true. You now have more competitors, and it's just a great marketplace right now for labor, which is good.
It would be great if they did Mae Young Classic, but for all the women across all the different brands. I thought that would be an interesting
That would twist. Be interesting, and I think, you know, this kind of goes into WWE's... Look, they like being able to say women's evolution, and they like to be able to edit together a 120-second video package that tells a convincing tale that there has been a narrative of progress in the WWE over the last decade, and it's bolstered by the fact that they got rid of a butterfly belt that was still around in the 2010s. But they also don't necessarily seem concerned with having the best women's wrestling in the world.
No, they still want models.
Yeah.
They still want model hot women, which is my fear. I thought Bayley was going to definitely be taken to NXT during this entire draft because she has so much goodwill there, and she's a good wrestler. She can be a wrestler there as opposed to a personality.
Oh, that draft. Boy, they made drafting seem boring to me. And I have been spending the last week, Jeff, getting ready for my fantasy basketball draft, spending hours a night working on like finding statistical outliers and stuff. I am a guy who's excited about a draft, and they somehow managed to make me bored about drafts.
Not only was it boring, but for the first three or four rounds, they were going in the exact order of the press release of the people eligible for the
pool. Okay, let's go a little bit further on the rounds, right? So, like, they make no sense. There's absolutely no draft strategy for either one of these organizations, well, because you would want to draft the people who hold the titles. And if you're a Fox at USA and you're really trying to play up this ham-handed Fox versus USA angle because you think it's really smart, if you know, yeah, it's a good idea. It's definitely one they thought out really heavily. If you're doing that, the idea would be to poach champions from each other to shake things up, to make it, you know, feel really fresh. And that would be the first thing you lead off with, to make sure that people who are watching this show on Friday night, for whatever reason, go, oh, wow, it looks like SmackDown just poached AJ Styles in the Bullet Club, and now they're coming over to SmackDown. That was a bold move. It looks like we got ourselves a little bit of brand war going on here. That first round was super ho-hum.
Vince McMahon doesn't know sports.
Right, he doesn't watch sports.
So he doesn't know anything about what makes a draft exciting. He doesn't know anything about trades, and they've been doing this for years.
He probably thinks fantasy sports has worked.
It was Stephanie, and they're doing the whole dumb for, you know, Raw gets three people for two because their show is 3 hours. They make it more difficult than it is, and then they make it more boring. And it's just, the only shocking thing to me, really, is that the Street Profits have now been officially drafted to Raw. When we thought they were being sent back down to NXT because they weren't being used on Raw, and they got another title shot, and maybe they're finally going to do something with them other than we want the smoke promos.
Want the smoke promos. Like, we want the smoke is just a phrase that they say that is devoid of all meaning.
Finally, WWE securing itself as the Chili's of sports. Announcing Tyson Fury versus Braun Strowman and Cain Velasquez versus Brock Lesnar for Crown Jewel in Saudi Arabia. Chris, how much help are the Chinese giving you on your basketball draft?
Oh, on my basketball draft? Tons. Yeah, I get all my best dirt from the Chinese.
In a week where... Let's get all the problematic things.
Hey, remember last week, Jeff, when I said that this Saudi Arabia thing could be a little bit of a bugaboo for WWE, and you're like, oh, no, I don't know. All right, so go ahead with your point.
No, I agree. It's a bugaboo. But you've compounded it with the addition of Tyson Fury, who has had a few opinions that aren't very popular with the kids. Especially,
I can't believe that they did the Lucha Mask thing in the WWE package.
Yeah, well, no, that's Cain Velasquez. I'm talking Tyson Fury.
No, but Tyson Fury also, he had some sort of boxing match down in Mexico he comes out
that's
in like
right.
a luchador mask to kind of, you know, poke at the culture here a little bit. I can't believe they included that in the package. I think they just looked at it and was like, oh, wrestling. Sin Cara wears a mask.
There's a part of me that thinks Vince is hanging back going, we're not even the most problematic sports league this week. The NBA stole our thunder. Damn you! It's obvious to me they want this Saudi Arabia show more and more, because you remember last time all the hype was, this will be greater than or equal to a WrestleMania. They want this to be a WrestleMania now, because they're just getting paid way too much money to have it just be a throwaway show.
Yeah, and I think that's also coming from the people who are paying the money, too.
Yes,
they want this
exactly.
show to feel massive,
to be important.
One of the biggest in the world, and in order to do that, you need to have the car crash Tyson Fury stuff. And can I just say on the NBA real quickly, not to defend them, I'm definitely not defending them in their position on China.
Sounds like you're defending them.
No,
here's
what I'm going to say. Everyone has changed their mind on the NBA expansion into China over the last month here. And I think if you go and check the record from 2018 and past, there were a lot of voices all across the political spectrum that were super in favor of sports leagues going into China and expanding into China, including WWE expanding into China. And only now are people starting to realize, oh, that might not be such a problematic free relationship.
Well, when you take a holier-than-thou position in some ways, there are at least five friends of mine who canceled WWE because they were so angry about this Saudi Arabia thing and the Jamal Khashoggi thing. And to a person, those five people's favorite sport is the NBA. And the NBA is the greatest sports league in the world. It's about teamwork. And look at how they're expanding into Asia. And you're just like, you got any thoughts today about that?
No, and again, my only thought is in 2018.
You're fine.
No one objected to it. Fine. No, I'm just saying. I'm glad that people have come around to the right position, but there are a lot of people who are dunking who were in the same camp as all of us like a year ago. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I mean, as long as you admit that you have some morally problematic positions sometimes because you like money. And you like finance and you understand these things. Sometimes you have to deal with people of various shades of gray in terms of their morality compared to yours. I'm fine with that. I am, as long as you admit that you're not pure as the driven snow, I'm great.
No,
James Harden has to take off the Shea t-shirt.
So, look. I think that a number of companies, and it's not just the NBA, but a lot of global organizations need to...
Apple?
Yeah, they need to rethink their relationship with China. Like, that's really kind of the serious political point here. Beyond
the UFC?
Yeah, no, it's certainly...
Even AEW. We've mentioned AEW is going to have a China problem.
And WWE is going to have a China problem, too.
Yeah.
So, no, like, I mean, this is... We're talking about the NBA, and we're having a little bit of... NWA is probably the only one that's not going to have a China problem.
They might, you never know.
Cornette wants to expand. yeah, no, but I'm with you. I think that a number of companies, and it's not just exclusive to the NBA or wrestling, are going to really need to rethink their relationship with China in the coming years here.
Cornette coming out in a...
He could have a different type of problem China, with China.
red China army hat. Behold our glorious leader. He's the best. Oh my God, Cornette's gone hard the other way.
Juche Cornette.
Oh my goodness. But yeah, that kind of covers everything main roster. WWE is their main roster for all these season premieres and draft between the network contrived stuff. They just seem uncool as hell. They just seem like they are just trying to throw whatever and going, see people like us. And it's coming off as desperate. In my opinion.
It's not even like the NXT stuff. It doesn't even feel desperate. It's like they're not aware they have a problem, that this thing needs to be flavored up, that you need to go into this TV era and sort of think of it as a reset button, a chapter restart. And I thought that NXT the first week did a really nice job, but you're a live show and you've got all of this other wrestling going on in the atmosphere right now that your audience is taking in. So you as a writing team need to be calibrating your writing against NWA, against AEW, looking at that. What are they doing? Not now NWA, but AEW the last few weeks here. And thinking about like, okay, how are we going to be counter-programming that? What is our big angle? And it feels like you're getting little teases of that. Imperium's getting built up. It seems like we're eventually cruising to a little bit of like an Imperium Undisputed Era clash, maybe, like the Tommaso Ciampa stuff. But if you ask me what the flavor of the NXT two-hour brand is, and even more sort of troubling, the NXT UK brand, I couldn't tell you. NXT UK... minus the horrible betrayal of The Hunt by Dave Mastiff, the coward, was actually an okay show, but is just flavorless.
Yeah, these people don't have personalities. They have jobs that they do, and they have taglines associated with their jobs, but, you know, everything's about their job as opposed to who are these people and why should we care about
him? And NWA did such a good job getting over why we should care about Tim Scott, why we should care about Eddie Kingston. Yeah, Tim Storm. Let's do a different promo. Tim Storm, why we should care about him, why we should care about, I even know Josephus. Josephus is probably the only character on NWA that felt like an anachronism that didn't necessarily need to hang around.
Yeah, and he was corpsing, which is a problem with that. It's like, if you're going to call somebody out and be angry when they come out, you can't
he totally didn't believe the gimmick. It's the other big problem, too. Like, I the gimmick definitely has problems, but the other problem is that he didn't buy in. So, kind of that tangent. But I like the fact that NWA makes me care about the baby faces. Mm-hmm. And NXT on TV, and NXT UK has not done a very good job in recent weeks making me care about the baby faces.
God bless James Storm. I felt bad for him when he didn't take the NXT offer. I think he comes off real well on that show as well. But let's get to the network stuff. Where would you like to start, Chris? Well, I include NXT in the network stuff, so I think that may be a bit incorrect. But
I forgot stuff. That 205 Live even ran this week, so I didn't even watch it. So did you?
I watched it. I'll go over it real quick. It was okay. The crowd was into it. Danny Burch and Oney Lorcan defeated Drew Gulak and Tony Nese in a fun match. I think they're starting a losing streak gimmick with Drew Gulak. They kind of went over the partnership and stuff. But it was a nice, hard-hitting little match. It just, it really didn't lead to anything. There was a squash match with, I believe it was Aria Davari and Chris Day, he's a local Nevada guy who holds a couple. I think Maverick Pro Wrestling is one of the belts he holds. I'm trying to remember it. I didn't take notes on all this, and I just watched it this morning as well. So, and it was a fun little match. And then they had Akira Tozawa and Brian Kendrick, in a plunder match, which was cool, and people got into it. Although people were, it's the main roster crowd where if you're hitting each other hard with kendo sticks and chairs, they're chanting for tables.
Kendrick is really good in plunder matches too, usually. I actually generally like him in those type of matches.
And that ended with Mike Kanellis coming in and helping beating down Tozawa.
Okay.
So, it was kind of a nothing show. They really didn't go hard about Leo Rush winning the title, which is weird.
Leo Rush thing was a bit rushed. I think that was a late decision.
It was a weird week for that kind of thing because, like,
it felt like they said we didn't have a big title drop last week, and they got that feedback, and they're like, oh, okay, let's do a big title change, and they shot it off with the Cruiserweight title changing.
Well, like, the Seth Rollins Hell in a Cell thing wasn't even brought up on Monday, even though it had happened 24 hours beforehand.
I feel like anytime you bring up Seth Rollins now, I have to like make that noise and like the lights have to go red in my apartment.
Oh God, I can't. That's the other thing. Just because we're all over the place today, and that's fine. That's what this show does. SmackDown drafting Bray Wyatt. What?
And the best part is the image for Bray Wyatt is not the Fiend, who's been the guy you've been trying to get over, but sweater vest, Rick Santorum looking Bray Wyatt, who we never actually see out in public. What?
The show that was going to have to make itself more of a sports-like feel drafts the more sports entertainment character on the roster. I was gobsmacked. I just went, okay, basically this is how I thought it was going to go. Is that WWE would say, well, you can make this product anything for anybody, and they're just going to give them the high, hard WWE product.
Yeah, no, there's no recalibration. I have serious concerns about the completion of the Fox contract. I could see Fox going, this isn't working.
FX1.
Yeah.
They're going to FS1. They have to, and it's going to be such a... Well, actually, you know where they may go. They may go and ask to do like Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. And then maybe, maybe we can move NXT.
That's the desperation move. That buys Vince time, right? Like, if it's not working on Friday, he goes, well, damn it, we got a wrestling war going on here on Wednesday nights.
Let's see if we can help our corporate partners and give USA more of a boost, and then we can give this to Fox, and since they don't really want us anymore. Yeah, that kind of thing. I don't think that can happen without a lot of giving money back and a lot of concessions. But
that also is going to require AEW's ratings to go in the right direction here.
Yeah, I mean, you got baseball right now. You got a bunch of things. You never know. I mean, they're not growing, which is scary.
No, they're down 400,000.
It was like, well, let's see what this is. Oh, it's just wrestling. It's just wrestling.
That to me is the clear story on those ratings. And like, it's the same thing with people checking out NXT. I think there were a lot of people who are lapsed fans who were like, oh, the Wednesday night wrestling wars, the Monday night wars are back, a little bit of a nostalgia kick for the Monday night wars. They tuned in and it was not scratching that itch.
So let's end with NXT. Let's get NXT UK out of the way. You are slandering Dave Mastiff for not watching monitors while he was getting ready for his match and not coming out and helping the greatest tag team in the NXT universe.
This opener was awesome. Like, can I just say, the Hunt versus Pretty Deadly is amazing.
Yes. We were asking for this. When Pretty Deadly came out, we wanted the Hunt to kill these fools. And the Hunt killed these fools. I wanted the wild boar, Mike Hitchman. I'll still call them by their names, otherwise I'll forget them because they've dropped the names. I want him to bite one of those guys' face off.
Primate J. Melrose.
Everywhere.
Primate J. Melrose is a really, really good hot tag. I like him a lot. He was a little more stout a few months ago, and I think that actually kind of wears better for the character here. But no, I really, really like Primate J. Melrose here. And then those horrible cowards, Imperium, came out.
I'm not going to trash Imperium because I like
them. No, it was cowardly, really, though. It's cowardly to go after the Hunt the way that they did.
I loved Hitchman's roll into the tag where he just does a barrel roll. You know, he's not trying to crawl through anybody's legs. He's just going to be like, hey, I'm going to do a chop block on you or something or a roll block and see if I can get through. And he did. And I howled at that. And then, yes, Eichner and
Bartel.
And Bartel. I'm forgetting names for some reason today. Eichner and Bartel came out. Nice brawl here. And then, of course, the psycho of Imperium, Alexander Wolf, comes out, makes a 3-on-2. And they get beaten down. And Chris, for some reason, then goes, well, Dave Mastiff's back there. Why didn't he come help?
Yes, because after the last NXT TakeOver UK, you had Dave Mastiff back there with the Hunt and going like, lift yourself up, boys. Oh, you got to lift yourself up. Where's Dave Mastiff? Where is he? Huh? Huh? Too busy worrying about Jordan Devlin. Yeah, no, coward.
Look, a professional athlete who is focused and not watching television. That is what he is.
No, a bad Dave friend Mastiff. Who doesn't care about the success or failure of his friends is what Dave Mastiff is.
I want the Hunt and I want Ever Rise, best of 31 on NXT regular TV on USA, and these teams will get themselves up. I'm fine with that. The aforementioned Jordan Devlin comes out. Jack Starr.
He makes it all the way to the ring, and when he did, I actually was like, hey!
Because you know when Jack Starr comes out,
there's a 50% chance he's not going to make it there.
He's going to die. That too. Yeah, I'd love to see Jack Starr get a bit of a run on 205 or NXT. Just to be in there with guys. Because he's good. He's really good. But he's just so small.
I think it would be fun to have him get, like, upset victories over some of the undercard guys, like beating a Wolfgang, beating a Mark Coffey, even getting a win over, like, a Fabian Eichner or something like that. Just to establish Jack Starrs as this, like, weird, scrappy underdog who could sneak one out on you.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. I like the way that you book that. And then occasionally bring him over to the States for a reward for being a good hand and let him do like a match against Drew Gulak on 205 or something. Yeah, I like that. I liked this. Devlin, I love Jordan Devlin as the prick who hates everybody, including other heels. He's amazing at this because he's calling out everybody on the roster. He doesn't care. And that's such a great bad guy to be, as opposed to, these bad guys are my friends. Nah, screw them too. I love Jordan Devlin. I hope he gets a little bit more exposure on US NXT as well.
Yeah, no, he is a star. It's the combination of Prince Devitt and Chris Benoit just kind of like rolled into an awesome little package. He's awesome.
Who can talk?
Yes.
As well.
Yeah, yeah. Unlike Benoit. Yeah, and even Prince.
Or Devitt.
Yeah, Devitt not great either. No, Devlin's captivating and he's intense and he's got swagger. I like this guy a lot.
He's just always, he's that guy at work who's always angry, no matter what. Say, hey, we're getting free lunch in there. Oh, the calories. Oh, I don't want that. I love it. And then, of course, Dave Mastiff comes out, having eschewed his friends in the hunt, as Chris so want to say. Coward. And challenges Devlin to a match, and they don't go at it. So
no, and then he has a match against Kenny Williams that kind of continues the storyline of Kenny Williams not being able to win clean. But God, these matches are so boring.
Match is boring. The spot where, number one, Kenny Williams, nobody should ever be taking a spot like that where you're thrown over the top rope to land on your feet. I bought in for a few moments until he eventually started putting full weight on the foot again. But nobody watches Kenny Williams and goes, man, I feel sorry for him.
No, there's no sympathy. There's no nothing for Kenny Williams. And so when they finally turn him heel, I mean, I guess the only thing you could say is, oh, well, his heel turn will go smoothly because no one's buying into him as a babyface. But the whole point needs to be people are rooting for this guy. Oh, come on, Kenny. Just, you know, dig one out. Like, we're cheering for him. We're cheering for him. And then he finally decides the way he's going to get this win is by hitting a low blow on a guy like Dave Mastiff. And he pins a dude he shouldn't have beaten, but he does it by cheating. And you want to be happy for him, but you can't be. There's an emotional state that I'm supposed to be at with Kenny Williams that they have completely missed.
I agree. It would be bad of us to overlook the fact that Tom Phillips is now the voice of NXT UK. In addition to 205 Live, that's where he ended up in this big shuffle. So he's going to be getting lots of frequent flyer miles and ability to DM people on Instagram.
Yeah, I was going to say, he gets to work the British circuit now.
They also brought over the ring announcer from NXT. I think her name's Carolyn.
Oh, okay.
And I really like her. It looks like I don't know what that means for Radzi. I hope they're keeping Radzi, but we'll see. I bring that up because the the Noam Dar Trent Seven interaction, I loved. Mostly because I love Angry Sid Scala.
Yeah, no, he's great.
Angry Sid Scala is the best. And I loved just the little sucker punch Noam Dar did with his left hand that caused all of that. And then he doesn't even flinch in terms of he doesn't sell that he punched him. It's almost like it never happened, but he's also not overacting on that thing. Like, oh, I'm so innocent. It's like, oh, I just punched him in the face. And it happened.
This was a small spot, but together. This was done so well. Kind of at the same level I felt with like NWA Power with the way that this spot worked really well. And so, you know, when we're talking about the NXT stuff, it does feel flavorless, but it's not as though they don't have really good workable elements that could very quickly be retooled into being dynamic beats inside of a weekly television show. Angry Sid Scala, definitely part of it. Trent Seven on a quest for justice as the Dusty Rhodes of this brand, absolutely. Noam Dar as the annoying little trickster shit who's always getting into trouble and always trying to wheel his way into the main event angle or doing something and working with each heel every week. They've got pieces here to work with. They just need to work with them.
Also flavorless was this Gallus South Wales Social Club interaction.
The South Wales Social Club are flavorless.
Social Club, yeah. It's, hey, we're small. We got the hometown pop, and we're gonna kick your ass on this one thing. I don't see them having a long, lengthy title reign. Let's put it that way.
And then this Piper Niven versus Jazzy Gabbert match.
Loved it.
I liked it. It was a good match. Really scratching my head that we just gave away Jazzy's first pinfall.
Yeah, I'm a little, because I think they're just gonna be moving over Rhea to NXT. So I think that's why they did it. It's a little bit inexplicable in that one, but I liked the Ginny interaction. I liked Rhea coming out, and they're finally going to just establish her as pure babyface.
Yes.
Because I liked the post-match between Piper and Rhea going, hey, you know, I know we beat each other up a few weeks ago, but you know what? We're cool now.
Rhea's going to do what Rhea's going to do is her babyface character, which is what kind of a cool babyface is these days. And you kind of need her to be a little bit like chaotic neutral, but like maybe even chaotic good. And I think that Rhea Ripley is actually a great cast for that.
She's a jerk, but she's your jerk.
Yeah, and she's generally, she's doing good things, but in a jerk way.
Yeah.
So
NXT.
NXT. All right. Where do we begin with NXT? When we talked about Drew Gulak and Leo Rush, I really liked that match. I just thought that it needed better framing.
The match itself was really good. They played into the dual screen better this week, I think, instead of just grabbing a chin lock and doing nothing. They actually did things during this break, which I think they're starting to learn that, yeah, you can't take a break like you can on main roster television after a dive and do nothing. You have to actually do something during the show. Leo Rush, people still don't know whether or not to cheer him or not because they can just see him going heel at any moment. But
they didn't really tell the babyface story with Leo Rush. I think he's a really natural babyface, and Morrow's kind of on the right track here where you talk about a guy who, when you saw him before, he was kind of going through some stuff upstairs, and he was not necessarily entirely himself, and he's a good guy, but like a lot of people, has some troubles, and sometimes that can like cloud things and cloud your judgment. And I think there's a much more sympathetic and constructive narrative for Leo Rush to get him over with people, and then also, you know, lean into his undersized nature and everything. Gulak's grudging respect
thing. Lean into Gulak bullying him.
Yes.
Lean into Gulak bullying him during the match and really taking a sadistic approach to trying to beat on the smaller man, and you'll get him over as a better babyface when he overcomes that. I didn't let you finish your point, and I apologize, but the Gulak respect thing I think is great for his character, but I think it needs to be counterbalanced with Drew Gulak being the Philadelphia stretching machine in the ring, where he's almost a Dean Malenko type,
right,
trying to just bend a guy into every type of maneuver and exact pain. And if you can get through the pain and beat him, then you get the handshake. But just beating him, you know, doing moves, that was my part of this match that I did not care for. I thought it just seems like Leo Rush just kind of caught him. And I thought a stronger win coming from behind would have been a little bit better.
As I said, I look at this match and the vibe I was getting was they got the feedback from the first week of NXT versus AEW of no title change, said, oh, we need a title change, and hotshotted a title change. Beth Phoenix, still very bad on commentary. I just wanted to mention that somewhere in the middle of this show. Not good at doing her job. And on SmackDown here, when you're watching the draft stuff, there's Samoa Joe, who's actually talking coherently about stuff with Renee Young. And then we go to the right side of the table with Booker T and Marble Mouth Beth Phoenix. And it's just agony.
My favorite thing was, glad you're here keeping the lights on in your house.
Yes, little, that was so funny. Little,
you know, because they're not, it's like, was that a dig at Moxley? No, they're friends. Just you know, it's a friendly shout out to him.
Yeah, no, and he's also like ribbing. Booker's, it's just a good-natured rib with it, Renee. Yeah.
Booker's bad, and Beth Phoenix is still Brick Hanlon from Anchorman.
It's
just yelling things, and you're just like, okay, Beth.
There are times where Nigel will ask her like a direct question that gives her the ability to take the question, retool it, and just like springboard off of it. And yeah, she just bulldozers past it. It's hilarious.
It's like, Beth, you were a champion once. What's it like when you're in a
working from a point of strength? When you were in the ring, Beth, you wrestled as the more powerful competitor in matches. Tell us a little bit about the psychology of that.
It's very important to do it in a position of strength, and she's really working over that arm. And
it's not even strength. She didn't even say strength with that one. She was like, "Well, I think Alexa Bliss has a lot of heart, but she needs to come back."
It's like, did THQ write your lines? What are you doing?
They should. They should just get THQ to record a whole bunch of Beth Phoenix lines, and then you can have Nigel just hit them, and he can just play off of them. You wouldn't be able to tell the difference.
I just wanted to yell, I love Lamp. just once. In the middle, and just see if anybody notices. This was unfortunate, but continue. Please.
Forgotten Sons defeat Breezango. I mean, all of these guys are so boring to me.
Nobody's being helped.
Yeah, no one's helped.
The Breezango aren't the Destruction Crew of my youth. It appears they're probably doing a Village People gimmick, where they're just going to come out as every single member of the Village People at some point.
I'm guessing they're not going to come out as the Indian Chief. Just tossing that one out there.
I have a joke for that. I can't say it on air. Let's continue.
All right. Next, we have Cameron Grimes defeating Boa.
Fine squash. This is the Magnum TA build. One move and you're out. Although the look over there thing was a bit much.
Yeah. And then Killian Dane comes in and beats up Boa, which I thought was weird. So, like, I'm fine with Grimes, but I had almost forgotten about the Grimes spot to begin this match because all of the back end of this was about getting the heat on Boa, and people were chanting for Boa at the end of it. So I actually think that the way that they did this was a little bit counterproductive for Grimes because Boa became the focal point of that segment.
Yeah, I don't... I don't know if it's probably not going to lead to a Boa... Killian Dane feud.
Not a feud, but certainly a match. Yeah, and they're going to try to get Boa over a little bit during that match.
I don't like the way those feuds are built, where somebody just comes in and beats a guy, and then another guy comes in and beats on that guy to send a message to the guy who just beat him. It's like, look, if you got a problem with him, go in there and fight him. It's just a weird way to build a feud. You're building a feud based on getting sympathy on a guy who you're going to give nothing to.
Damian Priest had a video package which kind of explained why he attacked Pete Dunne. To my eyes, the video package did some things good. I like the Archer, I'm taking my shot thing. That did a good job getting over at
you
least.
You liked that?
I think that like makes a little bit more sense out of the Archer gimmick than just the Arch. Yeah, I mean, look, it feels kind of like a non sequitur.
No, it's fine. Yeah. It's fine. It's just one of those things that's weird for us that you like that because I trash this Archer thing every week.
Yes, but like at least they're leaning into it. So I don't love the Archer of Infamy, and I don't like the shooting the name in flames on the screen thing. That's still cheesy. Yeah, but like I get it. He thinks he's a hot shot. Okay, makes a little bit more sense. But yeah, there's certain things about this gimmick I still don't care for.
The response by Pete Dunne is what I liked. I liked that they brought in Pete Dunne's history at NXT UK.
Yes.
And the fact that he breaks fingers. Hey, how are you going to shoot an arrow with no fingers? Now, if you got to lean into the Archer gimmick, then the way to counter go against that is to have
Pete I'm going to break your fingers.
About, yeah, I'm just going to break your hand. Yeah.
Yeah. Love no, it. I'm totally on board with that. So, you know, like, look, it's the Archer of Infamy is like a very WWE phrase that means nothing. But given what we're working with. Yeah, I know. Given what we're working with. Yes. And saying I want to live in infamy. I'm like, you should get a dictionary and look up what infamy actually means.
Is Damian Priest going across the country with like Gina Davis entering archery tournaments and, you know, winning those and then coming back and wrestling as a side gig? No. He came to WWE to be the Archer of Infamy. There's no archery in WWE. So what are you doing? It's just a dumb catchphrase.
Yeah, the Archer of Infamy makes me think of like a serial killer who kills people with a bow and arrow. That would be the Archer of Infamy.
It's like the infamous axe murderer. I don't think that means what you wanted to mean.
Yeah. No, man, my name is Infamous. Yeah, look up Infamous, my dude.
Yeah, look that up, kids.
All right, and then we got to our... No, this was not our main event. Then we got to Roderick Strong versus Isaiah Swerve Scott. Fine match. We discussed this a little bit earlier, and that's kind of my standing complaint. Isaiah Swerve Scott, in the context of this product, feels like nothing.
Even with the video package, because all they did was rerun the tournament package, where Swerve just means confidence. Okay, great. And he went out there, and he had a great match, and got over and lost because he was a dope. which is a little upsetting. I'd much rather you get lost or you lose on your merits, and then you can respect that a little bit more than he was distracted for a moment and then got kneed in the face. It's just like, oh.
Yeah, I need the Undisputed Era to do more meddling things. I don't have a problem with them coming out and mucking up the competitiveness of matches. So that's actually kind of a classic wrestling trope. But they need to do a better job actually making the babyface feel like he was about to win this match, but for the Undisputed Era. And that is, when the Undisputed showed up, that is not what felt like was happening at that point.
Yeah, if you're going to do the Horseman template for the Undisputed Era, do it all the way. Where you have the guy facing the young guy in a one-on-one match, and the young guy has the pin. And then the other guy's just running and beat on him, so he doesn't get it. They could have just done a Horseman beatdown here, and it would have been fine for Swerve Scott. The locker room comes out and saves him, and then they can cut a promo and then do the Velveteen Dream thing up there. What are you thinking about the Velveteen Dream going back to his roots and kind of the androgynous, highly sexualized Velveteen Dream gimmick?
I think it's better than him being your nostalgic wrestler of yesteryear gimmick. Yes. So you know, I think it's a market improvement. I think it probably serves better a little bit of the younger demographic too. So I think that, like, no, it's a smart move. I also like that with this gimmick, the Velveteen Dream can appear in eccentric places and give you different visual staging ideas for the NXT show.
I don't mind the crass knock at cocksmanship, because that's an old school staple to question people's manhood that has been taken out of wrestling in many, many ways. So I was fine with that too. It was a nice little old school touch, I thought.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I had no problem with that. I think that that's just,
I mean, Dusty used to talk about Ric Flair. Oh, you say you're a 60 minute man, but I heard after a minute, you know, whatever, you know, everybody would make comments about Ric Flair bragging about how long he could go with
it. Plays into the who is the better man sort of thing, and it's not as though like, you know, one's ability to perform sexually is unlinked from their, you know, ability to perform one's sex. So yeah,
well, it's also the easy thing to go to, and it also makes people angry.
Sure,
it does.
Sure.
If you question somebody's manhood, they get angry. So it was logical, so I liked it.
Yeah, no, I had no problem with that. We had Bianca Belair defeating Dakota Kai. I thought that this was a bit surprising, yeah.
Huh. I get it.
I get it.
It's weird that they've done both these stories with Tegan and Dakota.
Yes.
Who I guess are Team Kick. But I still, with both of these women, I have a problem with them doing Shining Wizards with knee braces.
I think maybe both these women end up going heel at some point. And I'm with you, just like, okay, not just from a like kayfabe standpoint. I do think it's just kind of dangerous to be doing Shining Wizards with a knee brace on. I don't know. Call me old fashioned.
I agree. I thought after the emotional return a couple weeks ago, I thought they were going to, maybe she's the one to beat Shayna, because logically in story, If you're big on continuity, Dakota Kai should be the person who beats Shayna Baszler, because she was the only one in the locker room who stood up to her that first time. This is interesting. Bianca Belair, not quite babyface, not quite heel. And I think they need to decide, because they want her to be a big star, but they just don't know what side of the ledger to push.
Yeah, so
on.
That promo was a mistake, because she literally positioned herself as the gatekeeper to Shayna Baszler.
Yeah, if you want to get the Shayna Baszler, you have to go through me. But it's I like it for the sports field, because of course you shouldn't have friends and stuff like that, but her and Rhea Ripley are basically doing the same thing.
Right, right. And then you also feel like Bianca's about to get fed to Rhea Ripley, so
I'm fine with her getting fed to Rhea Ripley. I don't mind that. I think it's burning through material a little bit too quick.
I agree.
Because I think that's something you could
build. And I think
up.
It burns through Bianca. I don't think that Bianca can keep taking L's. So her losing to Rhea Ripley, I do think, is a problem down the line here.
I mean, that's a feud I want, is Rhea Ripley and Bianca Belair, because Rhea Ripley is so big and Bianca Belair is so athletic. I mean, I could watch those two go at each other for a while, especially, you know, especially if Bianca pulls out some of the hits that she hasn't pulled out in a while, like the moonsaults and the 450s and the hair whipping. I mean, I'm down with that. So, yeah.
Then we had Walter defeating Kushida in a match of two undefeated guys. I think there was really no kind of doubt that Walter was going to prevail in this. What do you think about this match, Jeff?
It's Kushida's best match he's had since coming
in. Yeah.
I mean, that's all I can... I mean, other than that, it was kind of expected, you know, that Walter was going to beat him down. I liked it. I didn't love it.
Yep. I thought it was fine, but it was... A very bland main event. Yeah, it was missing something.
It was missing spice. It was missing heat. It was missing really him beating down.
I never bit on Kushida against Walter.
I never bit on him winning. Nope. Exactly. You got to bite on the guy winning. Otherwise, what's the use of having this match? Oh, we skipped one, by the
Who
way.
Who we skip?
Because we went over the Rhea Ripley.
We skipped the squash match. You want to go back to the? Let's go back to Aaliyah getting squashed by Rhea Ripley.
I wanted to put over that finishing move. I loved it.
Oh yeah, no, that's good. No, she did a good job. But yeah, I went past that because we talked about Rhea Ripley as a babyface. I felt like we hit that note, and no, she did a really good job with the stretch muffler that she transitioned into a slam.
Noof is never getting anything.
No, Vanessa Bourne, like teasing for 1 second she was going to get into the ring was funny. But yeah, otherwise, no. No, Aaliyah's going nowhere.
Yeah, going back to Walter and Kushida. Kushida has never been put over as a personality, and that would have helped. And Walter is the big boss.
He needed to beat some of these Imperium guys. Like Kushida should have dropped Alexander Wolf, especially when you were doing all of those Alexander Wolf squash matches where he was getting these wins. Perfect setup for Kushida to beat Alexander Wolf and then have him beat Bartel. And then like Bartel goes up to Wolf and is kind of like, haha, see, that's why you're the low man. And then he beats Bartel and then he beats Eichner. And then he builds up to Walter and Walter cuts him down.
And then they've joined him up with Breezango, who nobody cares about either. So it's one of those things where it's just like...
Well, they can all wear vests together.
Kushida's a Japanese superstar. That's his gimmick. Japanese superstar. Nothing else. Japanese superstar Kushida.
Look, we're 5 years into this Japanese talent coming into WWE, and I'm just going to go out on a limb, Jeff.
They've done nothing.
They're not
anybody.
Particularly good at booking them.
No, any foreign talent... Who thinks they're going to be, well, we'll use you as to open a market up into your home country.
Make sure that contract has a lot of zeros at the end of it.
Yeah, Kenta's over in New Japan going, yeah, that's what they told me. yeah, I liked it. I liked NXT, but man, it feels like a big meal with not a lot of spice.
Yes.
It's still very good. But it's just like, what is going to differentiate this from any other WWE product with different people?
Any other products we need to hit this week, or have we covered all of the 25 hours of wrestling that's on every week?
Someone asked me, what else have you watched this year? And I said, nothing, because I have no time.
I do occasionally get asked about other brands, like, oh, Chris, do you keep up with this indie promotion or that indie promotion? I'm like, guys, do you realize how much wrestling we have to watch to do this show? It's not necessarily.
Jeff, are you looking forward to New Japan? I was like, did you watch TNA this week?
I always make time for Wrestle Kingdom. And I will occasionally have like TNA on or something like when I'm doing some editing or whatever. It's on in the background really intermittently. But yeah, to do the big wrestling digest that is this 1 hour show, it requires digesting like 8 hours of wrestling and then breaking it down into 30 minutes of takes for me and Jeff.
We still enjoy wrestling, guys. And you shouldn't complain about it because you're getting paid for this and whatever. And it's like, okay, great. But, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, it's still a lot. And we love doing it, but it's a lot. And this week on pay-per-view week was a lot because, you know, you had the extra 5 hours to watch.
Oh, I'll admit that I don't watch the pay-per-views live anymore. I catch them all in rerun.
Cool.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's just, you can't.
I don't watch the main roster live anymore that much unless I can catch part of it before I leave work because, you know, I just need that little time I have for commercials to just kind of get through it all. But you have a few plugs for the shows on the site. There's now a new Wednesday Night Wars show with our friend Garrett Kidney, who doesn't like WWE, which is very weird to be doing a show comparing AEW and NXT when you don't like one of the products, which he has said he doesn't really like NXT all that much. But they do like a scorecard of who won the week, et cetera, et cetera. You can listen to Everything Elite, the AEW-centric show with those guys over there breaking down everything. We'll still continue to do, you know, hit things here and there. We are Shake Them Ropes, patreon.com/shakethemropes, although we don't have any new audio because there's just too much video to watch on this side of it. You can follow me at CrapGame13. You can follow Chris at ChrisNovembrino. You can just follow the show at Shake Them Ropes. Follow Voices of Wrestling at Voices Wrestling. And you can follow any other personalities or whatever their things are. But Chris also does other podcasts that he has plugged on this show during the show, such as Don't Worry About the Government.
I didn't plug during this episode, but normally...
I thought you did.
No. I was spamming the plugs on the last episode here.
Oh, you know what I was thinking? I was thinking of our conversation before we rolled.
Oh, yeah. We did. We kicked it off with a little bit of, like, society talk with Hawk and Nove.
China talk.
Don't Worry About TV is where you can find Don't Worry About the Government, my news and politics show, the All in the Family podcast. We just had a really good episode come out about the 1972 election, so for those of you who are interested in the election, historical parallels, and all that sort of stuff, go and check out the episode that we had. Mike Comes Into Money, where Mike gives all of his money to the McGovern campaign. Great episode. Really fun conversation I had with my co-host, Lindsay Duke. You can find that at allinthefamilypodcast.com. I'm at Chris Novembrino on Twitter.
You can also go to the show site at redcircle.com/ I believe it's Shake Them Ropes, all one word, but you can find the Voices of Wrestling. I think there's a donate button there if you don't want to join the Patreon. We thank you for listening to Shake Them Ropes. I love Heel Pam.
I'm Beth Phoenix.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.